Welcome to the Atlantic Council Events Podcast. The Atlantic Council serves the global community by bringing together world leaders, foreign policy experts, and great thinkers to shape today's policy choices and navigate the global challenges of the 21st century. In the following program, the Chinese Vice Minister of Finance, Zhu Guangyao, speaks on Friday, April 17th, on China's vision for a more prosperous Asia-Pacific region.
Mr. Vice Minister, we're delighted and honored to have you here. 非常感谢你到我们这里来。 Thank you so much for being with us. This event is part of the Council's project on shaping the Asia-Pacific future, led by our Scowcroft Center's non-resident senior fellow, Olin Wethington, former Assistant Secretary for International Affairs at the U.S. Treasury Department and former Special Envoy on China. This project is currently on phase one, which focuses on the economic and financial architecture in the region. Vice Minister Zhu's visit to Washington, which coincides with the spring meetings of the IMF and the World Bank, comes at a critical time as new regional initiatives supported by China, such as the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, the New Development Bank, and the Silk Road Initiative, are showing strong momentum. And the effectiveness of existing multilateral financial institutions are under increasing scrutiny. On a broader scale, China is playing a larger role in shaping the global economic order and is calling for adjustments in the existing economic and financial architecture. The RMB's internationalization continues to expand, and the outflow of Chinese capital into foreign markets is rising. At the same time, many economic forecasts point to the prospect of an economic slowdown in the Asia-Pacific region, including in China, where efforts to strengthen the economy to a new normal face challenges. We are undoubtedly facing a transformational period in Asia, where there are great opportunities to pursue common interests, but also serious potential risks of fragmentation in the finance, monetary, and trade architecture. We are delighted to have Vice Minister Zhu with us today to provide his perspective on these very important developments, the role new financing institutions will play in the region, and China's long-term vision for economic growth in Asia. Vice Minister Zhu Guangyao was appointed to his current position in May 2010, following a very distinguished career at the Ministry of Finance, including as China's Executive Director at the World Bank, Director General of the International Department, and Assistant Minister. He serves the critical function of China's G20 Finance Deputy and also is deeply involved in the U.S.-China strategic and economic dialogue. These roles will be particularly critical as China prepares to host the G20 Heads of State Summit in 2016. So without further ado, I'd like now to invite Vice Minister Zhu to the stage for his remarks, after which we'll continue with a Q&A session moderated by Olin. Vice Minister Zhu, the time is now yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Ambassador Hengsman. And I particularly thank you for your contribution to promote friendship between China and the United States. I know how many days you spend in Beijing, in Washington, to boost our relations. We particularly thank you very, very much. And here, I'm so happy to see many old friends, Dr. Kato, Dr. Yuquan Huang, and many. So I really appreciate this opportunity, and thank you for your Professor Lipso also here, and your contribution to great relations between U.S. and China. And today, I'm really honored to be here at Atlantic Council to talk about Ambassador side that's between U.S. China cross Atlantic Pacific Ocean. And here is that real factor to remind us to think about in Atlantic Council to talk about relations between our two countries cross Pacific Ocean. And this indeed reflect the change and reflect this new global situation. But we fully understood that one factor is no change. United States, with more than 300 million people, you have two oceans, Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. And China, with 1.3 billion people, their country is facing Pacific Ocean. Just as President Xi Jinping emphasized to President Obama, Pacific Ocean is broad enough to accommodate our two countries, China and the United States. At this time, I also recall in 1972, that time when President Nixon landed at Beijing Airport, he said to Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai, first sentence is like this: I shake hands with you crossing the Pacific Ocean. That's history. Since 1972, great change happened in our two countries, and our relationship is must be strengthened and strengthened. Now our relations not reflect in the 520 billion trade volume annually, and the U.S. had more than $100 billion FDI investment in China. China hold about $1.2 trillion treasury bond. But our relations is reflect in the very connected, so close interconnected relations. Both of China and the United States hope and strongly wish others economic development will. That's really contribute to domestic other side development, made contribution to another side, because it's so close connection between our two countries. I know, although we have many, many common ground, and that's particularly we are all focused on peace and development. This is very important for our continual develop our relations. However, I also understand the difference, particularly our culture difference. That's history, that's culture background. And here, as a Chinese, I particularly understand U.S. American sometimes is not very patient to listen to other speech a long time. So I guarantee you, and particularly media friends, my speech is no longer than 20 minutes. I must finish before 3:20. And then, as ambassador said, we have more time to discussion. Take advantage of this opportunity. I would like to address to you two points. One is regarding international financial architecture. Second one is regarding how we are working together, Chinese and American, to prepare September event for our presence meeting. We really thought that's historical opportunity, and the successful meeting and the good result not only impact our two countries' relation, but also to the world. So for international finance architecture, here is many expertise in the room, and not just the old friend I mentioned on the World Bank board, also that's in charge of Chinese relation with the World Bank specific stuff. So I just want to use this opportunity to say China is a key member of IMF World Bank, because until today, Bretton Woods system is still reflected by the key agencies, IMF and the World Bank. This is established just before World War II ended, 1944, July 1944. And 70 years to show this Bretton Woods system is continue play the role. China is involved in the system in the early 1980s after China opening up and the reform process begin. So today, China is a very important member of IMF, World Bank, and we really thought as the important shareholder of World Bank and the IMF, those agencies is also our agencies. We just make every effort we can to enhance capacity of those agencies, and also we push the reform of these agencies to enhance the efficiency. That's purpose is that the developing countries' voice can be reflected fairly in those agencies, reflect the change of global economic structure, and that's ensure the those institutions can play efficiency role to promote global stability and promote global economic development. And I just want quick recall, during the crisis, China through NAB program and bilateral borrowing program gave extreme financial help to IMF. And we also is a very key member of World Bank. The project implement in China so far, I believe here there's many former director of World Bank China department here, you can identify witness the project implement in China are successful and the most successful project in China. And not only that, and since IDA 15, China become donation country. Now we can see IDA 15, IDA 16, IDA 17, China's contribution to the World Bank Group soft window is increased amount. With economic development, although China have domestic poverty issue should be solved, but we understand our international responsibility, we increased our contribution to the World Bank Group, particularly IDA. And now this one, we hope with our experience for poverty reduction, contribute to the global poverty reduction program, not only just largely reduce poverty population in China per se, but also contribute to global poverty reduction process. And in this process, China is more integrated with the global system. And we can proud to see China is actively participate in the current international financial system. Also, we made big contribution to current financial international financial system. Now, we just follow Ambassador Hongsman just said about China's proposal for Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB. That's Chinese President Xi made this proposal is based on the real demand for infrastructure development in China. According to ADB figure, the next 10 years, 8 trillion gap in investment in infrastructure in Asia, that's between money supply and real demand. So big gap. One side, we really hope World Bank, ADB play more important role, increase the lending leverage, and give more support to infrastructure development in Asia. Simultaneously, we take the responsibility, we give the proposal, give our suggestion to the international society, particularly to Asian members. Now it's time we establish AIIB. President Xi Jinping made very clear when he met with the delegate in Beijing to sign MOU for establishment of AIIB. President Xi Jinping emphasized 3 points. I strongly believe this 3 points is the real guidance for China's proposal to establish AIIB. Firstly, President Xi Jinping emphasized we must jointly deal with the challenge to promote growth, and only we have strong solidarity, we can achieve the goal. President used the old saying to say, if people can really solidarity together, Taishan Mountain can be moved. This is the first sentence President emphasized, that's solidarity. Second one, President Xi Jinping also used the Chinese old saying, is if you want to become rich, you must first set up road. That's a very simple but very deeply reflect factor, the fact how important to development infrastructure. And that's big gap must be filled, and we must through develop infrastructure to boost our economy. Third point, President Xi Jinping emphasize the AIIB is open and inclusive. And this gave us very clear instruction. AIIB proposed by President Xi Jinping on behalf of China, welcomed by Asia countries as well as country outside Asia. The intention for that is focused on economic development rather than any other intention. The relationship between AIIB with World Bank ADB is a complementary role rather than replace. So more generally to say, China's role in current international financial system is constructive, and we play the contributor function, and we want to improve that. We want to enhance the capacity of that rather than any intention to overthrow the current system. And that's President Xi Jinping from very beginning just gave the word, the very clear signal. That's a 3 point. I think it's a very clear, simple, very clear, and really reflect the guidance policy China and the presidency himself. And so we pay attention to Secretary Lu said after his visit to Beijing last month. Just in the beginning of this month, Secretary Lu made a speech in San Francisco on international finance system reform or international financial architecture reform. So we hope China and the United States as very key, very important members of IMF World Bank, we are working together to contribute to improve and enhance the capacity of IMF and the World Bank. We strongly urge U.S. Congress quickly approve 2010 IMF quota reform agenda. That's 5 years, too long time, too much delay. That's damage the reputation of IMF, damage the reputation of G20, also damage the image of United States. I strongly hope U.S. Congress can accept the proposal recently made by U.S. administration more quick to conclude their internal debate. So this, I'm sorry, I must finish here this topic. The second one is about President Xi Jinping visit in September. President Obama invite President Xi Jinping visit to have state visit to U.S. in September. We saw this very important visit, and we strongly believe the successful visit, successful meeting between President Xi Jinping, President Obama, can give very positive impact to the relations between China and the U.S. Also give this very positive impact to the global. And I just very recall in 2013, in Sunnyland of California, two presidents have an unusual meeting, and they got great achievement among them. I think the very important one is between our two countries to reach the agreement, launching two presidents launching negotiation of bilateral investment treaty negotiation on the pre-establishment and the negative list. In China before, frankly, we don't know very much negative list. But now in our every department discuss what says negative list be collected. And also in the free trade zone in Shanghai Forest, now just last week expand to province Guangdong, Fujian, and Tianjin. Also use as a negative list as a guidance for investment. So that's one big impact from the Sunnyland discussion. For last year in Yingtai, in Zhongnanhai, two presidents had long time night talk. We know that's great achievement reached. Most attractive one by international attention is environment agreement. Both presidents made joint statement, announced East development goals on climate change. And that's really boost the momentum of global efforts to deal with the challenge of climate change issue. So that's mainly, I just say, that's a very important achievement by last two times, two president meetings achievement. Now we have great expectation for September meeting by President Xi Jinping and President Obama. However, we understand those achievements must be based on the strong support by our two great peoples. So we look forward with the U.S. people and the U.S. administration to make sure every effort will for President Xi Jinping and President Obama's meeting. Okay, that's 3:20. I must close here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Minister Zhu. You have a reputation as being forthright and strong and open, and I think you more than met that expectation with your opening comments today. We thank you for being here. As Ambassador Hudson said,
many times, and very frankly, that's the culture between our two countries should be narrowed.
Well, that's right. And I must indicate that the idea of opening this to the media came from his ministry. And we appreciate your desire to be frank, to have an open exchange. I want to underscore and recognize your commitment to a very strong bilateral relationship. And so we're very grateful you would take the time at this busy moment to come and meet. Let me start this Q&A. And I'll just pose one or two questions to you. I want to turn it to the audience very quickly, please. And let me begin and probe a little deeper, if I can. You had highlighted in the first half of your remarks China's initiatives with respect to the financial architecture, in particular in Asia, and ask you about rules, norms, standards that underlie these institutions, if I could. You have indicated in your remarks a very strong commitment to the existing international system, the Bretton Woods system. You have also said that the new institutions that China has proposed are complementary to that. Is this about simply the adjustment that's required in recognition of China's rising status? Is this simply about the mobilization of resources, this $8 trillion gap in infrastructure you reference? Is it about inefficient and slow existing institutions in responding? Is it about representation, that is a need for a larger voice at the table, not just for China, but for many emerging markets? Or is there, if I could ask, something more than that? Is there here a set of, shall we say, Chinese or Asian norms or rules or principles that you are seeking to establish as undergirding the existing architecture? Help us understand a little deeper the distinction between process, structure, and underlying values behind these institutions, if you would. Thank you.
Thank you. You want the deepening and inside consideration. I understand that concern. Firstly, I just report all of you that's 3 points emphasized by President Xi Jinping. That's real guidance of China give the proposal to establish this bank, AIIB. And absolutely, we follow this instruction from our top leaders. And the president himself also keep very close watch and must on the right track for development. That's general important comprehensive policy guidance. Now, more detail. I want to report you for our thinking. The bank must be operated based on rule of law. What's rule of law of guidance of ADB is the mandate of AIIB or article of agreement of AIIB. Now, the founding member is fixed. In the later of this month, they will have more opportunity gather together to discuss of mandate. That's very important. If that's inside guidance, and everything should be decided by real negotiation, and the role of law of AIIB is mandate of AIIB, of bank. So that's through not only China, that's through the negotiation. And of course, China heard from US, from others, they want high standard. We agree with high standard. And that will be gathered opinion through negotiation and reflect in the formal legal document. That's fixed. That's the bank will exactly follow the rule of law of AIIB. We hope that use this 2 or 3 months, we can really conclude negotiation on mandate. So we know from World Bank, from ADB, during the discussion, negotiation of article of agreement, not very easy because members have this different emphasized point. We must be gathered opinions and reflect large members' opinion and finalize approve. And for a procedure of approve this mandate in different members is different. Someone just need administration. Someone must through negotiation report to Congress. And this process should be follow the each member country's legal system. And this is rule of law. Beyond this, there's policy guidance. For example, World Bank resettlement guidance and procurement guidance. That's detailed policy guidance. I think Roseman should let the board of AIIB discuss with the executive management team, and the management team give this proposal approved by board, and that's a real procedure of bank to follow. Mm-hmm. And of course, we hope that this bank is really can help to fill the gap of funding need and funding available investment in infrastructure. But we understand even $50 billion to $100 billion as a capital still smaller, and to compare with the large demand, they must have real capacity to mobilize private capital. So for private capital mobilization, we must be very careful and let public fund to show the role of seed function and mobilize private sector investment. We should let private sector insist on their principle. they only see or assessment the investment with the real profit. They can move in. Otherwise, they will wait. So public fund support, development bank should play the real role as the seed money and to have project assessment and prepare project maybe more comprehensive way and balance real demand in social side and profitability. But I think that's World Bank ADB very marginal profit base. We should be learn from that experience. And also for detailed project design, we should exactly follow the policy guidance. But we couldn't expect one project can achieve all policy intention. For example, we saw World Bank sometime design the project. Yuquan, I discussed with Yuquan that time, he's the director of World Bank China Department. Many times, if you want to put every policy demand in one project, that's very difficult to achieve the results. And some failure is caused by too much expectation. That's good feeling, but not real reflect reality. So we hope exactly follow the policy, such as resettlement policy, procurement policy, and so on. But that's for through project reached the policy target should be based on reality. So that's the basic thinking. In general, we hope that the mandate is that real rule of law, and the inside policy guidance should be strictly learned from World Bank, ADB, and for real practice to show reflect reality.
Those are high aspirations. I'm struck, I think, by the language you use, and in many ways its similarity to the kind of standards, the values in operation that existing lenders use. Institutions are obviously impacted by a lot of externalities. I mean, you made reference to the necessity to incorporate high standards with respect to environment, population dislocation, interest groups. Outside interest groups in these areas have obviously had a significant impact on the ability of existing institutions to lend into infrastructure projects. You reference also the discipline of the market, the ability to take projects to the market and to fund them in addition with private capital. That obviously is another constraint that that impacts. How do you think operationally about the ability of the bank to deal with these kinds of outside realities? I mean, I hear the standards you articulate. Some have said, and I'd be interested in your reaction to this, that if the AIIB wants to become successful, it really has to look a lot like the existing multilateral lending institutions. Certainly, if its underlying standards, rules, modes of operation are similar.
Policy similar, but that's the way I think we must have that distinction. Particularly, this bank is just focused on infrastructure. This purpose couldn't be moved anymore, anytime. I used to be World Bank Executive Director in 2001. I jointly with India ED made a proposal, suggest World Bank should be back to finance infrastructure. Why in the history, first time Chinese ED and India ED jointly made a proposal to the management, World Bank should be returned to finance infrastructure. that means World Bank sometimes away from investment in the infrastructure, because for 1990, 1980, that time many private sector drop in infrastructure. So people think now is withdraw by public money, World Bank, ADB, or other development bank withdraw, focus only to social development. I think that's the lessons we must learn. We should insist on the policy. Infrastructure development is real goal. I don't say World Bank totally back, but World Bank should back. And now we welcome World Bank already increased investment in infrastructure side. But I just recall in early 2000, that time, World Bank is away from investment. So I think that's a very clear distinction in the goal and the way. So this one, we must keep this, insist on to implement our policy goal in infrastructure development, because for China, we really had lessons, the bottleneck of infrastructure development. Now India and other countries face same challenge. So in Asia, that's a real gap. And this one is very important. If you moved from your mission, your goal, sometimes you lose opportunity. But lost opportunity is one thing, is that delayed process of development. And I certainly believe until today is lessons World Bank and ADB should learn. And now I must say, we welcome their increased investment in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. That's why I...
And maybe, as you indicate, a role for partnership between the institutions.
Yes, yesterday...
Pushing them both toward common...
Yesterday, I had talk with President Kim. President Kim said that he warmly welcome the new bank, mm-hmm. and he much expectation is real cooperation. So we see the new AIIB or BRIC bank is playing complementary role to the current development bank. And I believe President Kim, President ADB is think there are also opportunity to cooperate with Rose Bank to boost the investment in infrastructure. So let's show real complementary role and help each other.
Let me now, if I could, turn to the audience, and we'll start the lady here, and then go up here, and then I'll get some of the others who've raised their hands. You'd state your name, your affiliation first.
Sure.
Appreciate
I'm Rita Chen from Central News Agency, Taiwan. Regarding the AIIB, I wonder that is a Chinese Taipei appropriate and acceptable name for being a member of AIIB from China's point of view? And also, I'm just wonder that are you aware of any reason why Taiwan cannot be a prospective founding member of AIIB? Thank you.
Oh, that's... Cross,
gave you a hard one, though.
Yeah, no, that's across Taiwan Strait, and that's. But we are very happy to answer my fellow's question, and we hope that both sides people think we should have working together to develop that peace and development, and both Taiwan Strait people as a Chinese join as stable environment and promote economic development. Regarding her question specifically on AIIB, and I repeat what President Xi Jinping said, the third principle is open and inclusive. We welcome country and region economies to have opportunity for cooperation. As the founding member status, you just specifically want to clarify. As I know, the both sides cross street, let's have this deepening discussion. Now issue is what real appropriate name to join the AIIB. So I can say that Taiwan is not a founding member, but as economy, certainly they have big opportunity as a new member of AIIB. We hope that this opportunity between Taiwan streets. That's more understanding and more cooperation. Okay. And enjoy the peace development together.
Thank you. We'll go here to the front, then I'm going to work my way back.
All ladies.
We'll start here.
All ladies tough.
Ladies first, right?
Ladies first.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer Lee with Hong Kong Phoenix TV. I have a question regarding yesterday's G20 meeting. So yesterday you had a meeting with your counterparts of United States, Japan, and Europe. I wonder what's the main issues you discussed, and have you reached any consensus? Also, is the AIIB also part of the discussion? Have the United States and Japan show their intention to join or not? Thank you.
Just as I said, that's the ladies' question is tough. And also, from our Taiwan to our Hong Kong, yes. That's the report asking questions continually. And yesterday we had a G20 meeting, but I don't know you all get this information. That's four countries had a meeting. So you got this information publicly or privately?
Privately.
So that's how. I just say yes. That's taking advantage of opportunity of G20. That's many countries to have that's bilateral or something like bilateral meeting, and discuss the global economic situation. I must emphasize G20 is very important forum focused on global economic situation and the financial market stability. And now we are seeing some improvement in global economy, but unfortunately recovery is too slow and even situation is too much. That's why we must strengthen our policy coordination. And this time we also emphasize very much this boost confidence. And we certainly face some challenge ahead, including divided monetary policy. U.S. certainly will move to the interest normalization. Be careful, I would use this Chairman Yellen said. They will not realize normalization in next Fed meeting. That's in April. But after that, anything can happen. Let's leave the room to think that in June meeting is a possibility to increase or not increase. So that's very careful Chairman Yellen had introduction. However, my understanding is that the U.S. will go to interest normalization. And with very patient way is that gradually increase interest rate. This U.S. side. On the other hand, EU, ECB have this large QE, and their intention, of course, is make this inflation rate to the 2% and boost the European economy. There's some improvement in economy, but we pay attention to yesterday and the day before, Germany 10-year bond yield to the negative. So CPI is up, that's a good thing, but bond yield, particularly 10-year yield, is to the negative. We should be very carefully evaluate situation. For Japan, it's already 8 trillion QE, so how impact to the Japanese economy still need to be assessed. So in this way, the global coordination become more important. It's developing country side. For emerging economy, certainly also performance show that's a different trend. And you can read the communique of G20 finance minister meeting. The India, China as a key emerging economy show that's stable and growth. On the other hand, not to say, but situation in Russia and Brazil should be make more efforts to improve. So that's a very divided situation in the monetary policy and a very divided situation even in emerging economies. So now how important is real make policy decision is that we are consensus, couldn't just rely on monetary policy. fiscal policy, if have the room, must play its role. That's real meaningful policy expansion if it's possible. So I think I report to you all, that's a general discussion. What's your next question? Yeah. Oh, AIIB. AIIB, this time, not too much, but I can frankly talk with you just March 30, March 31. When Secretary Liu in Beijing, he, on behalf of President Obama, gave this full description U.S. policy to Chinese Premier Li Keqiang. And 4 points, I think Secretary Liu emphasized. You can double check with the Treasury. I know some people from Treasury also here. First of all, U.S. support all proposal regarding infrastructure development. Second one, U.S. welcome China play the big role in international financial affairs. Third point, U.S. insist on high standard. And for this one, both U.S. China will continue keep information change. Last one, U.S. will go through everything both sides accept to strengthening cooperation on AIIB issue. He particularly mentioned SED, World Bank, ADB, such kind of agencies. So I think something already described by Secretary Liu's deputy, Nathan Sheets, in the Congress hearing.
I'm going to call on Matthew here in a minute, but just a G20 comment, if I could, very quickly. We may be seeing, as I think some of your comments indicated, and as I think we're sensing here, that we've exhausted the impact of accommodative monetary policy. You mentioned the impact of fiscal, but as a suggestion, just very quickly, I'm not asking you to respond, structural, that is deep structural reform within economies as a theme, a focus of your presidency next year in the context of the G20. That deep structural reform, although different in each of our countries, is very profound.
We particularly welcome this idea, and we thought that increase the potential productivity become more important. That's related deeply with the structural reform and the institutional reform.
We've exhausted monetary and fiscal, personally, but Matthew and then here. Matthew?
Thank you. First of all, I agree. Structural reform, very important and a good priority for your G20 year. I wanted to ask two questions about the specific questions about the governance of the AIIB and your plans for that. If Japan or even the United States or Taiwan were to join in the next round or a future round, not as a founding member, how would the capital shares of those countries be handled? Because especially with big economies like the United States and Japan, it could significantly change the allocation of shares. The second question is about your plans for a resident board or plans apparently not to have a resident board in Beijing at the bank. Can you explain the rationale if that's the correct understanding of your plans?
Yes, first of all, I think that's for Japan and Taiwan as economy is different with the U.S. role. U.S. is outside of Asia. And Japan and the economy of Taiwan is inside Asia. So according to MOU agreed by previous decide founding members, that's 25% to 30% of share will live for outside. So U.S. is outside of Asia, and this will occupy this portion. And Japan or other economy in Asia should let's include that's 75% to that's a big portion because that's AIIB is Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank. And this is already agreed and reflected in the MOU signed last October. This one about residential board, I know there's many debate. I think that's the intention is to increase the efficiency and improve the capacity for serve the clients. But again, this one should be decided through the negotiation on mandate discussion.
Right here, and then next, Ken.
Thank you. Dong Huiyu with China Review News Agency of Hong Kong. And I still remember last time when you came to this town, you make a speech in Peterson Institute.
Yes.
You talked a lot about the BIT, Bilateral Investment Treaty. And you also mentioned that China will not challenge the dominant leadership of the United States in the financial system. And you mentioned that the BIT negative list will be proposed in the early months of this year, but we still didn't see that happen. And could we expect that the BIT could be reached before or when President Xi Jinping comes to this town to have a visit? And secondly, you mentioned that China will not challenge the current international financial system. But do you think this time the international reaction and the response is beyond your expectation regarding the AIIB? Thank you.
good. About BIT, just again, I report you this very important achievement in Sunnyland discussion by President Xi, President Obama, to launching negotiation on bilateral investment between China and U.S. on pre-establishment and the negative list. And last November in Beijing, both presidents made decision and made instruction for staff. That's early time to change the negative list. So I think you can fully expectation this month or next month will certainly both sides will change. But very frankly, I think that during President Xi Jinping, President Obama to have meeting, important meeting September in Washington, we couldn't conclude that because we are expectation both Chinese administration and US administration in September we can reach substantial stage achievement and pave the way for next. But I can report you yesterday in Congress Hill, Senator Sullivan asked the same question. He said, let's expect to see more time to review that documentation. I said, that's early. So that's we are should be based on reality. We both have this intention with next 2 years. With Obama administration, we can conclude. But we should base on reality for hard work, both negotiation team. And the US team will be removed back from TPP and to this conversation and the negotiation. But both sides very, very emphasized. For China, we saw that's not only relations for between China and US, we also think that's to promote domestic reform. So now you can see we issued our independent negative list for Shanghai, now move to the Fujian, Guangdong, and the Tianjin. That's more short, but for this offer to your side should go through negotiation. And we hope that's hard work by both team, we can really move ahead. We are expectation in September, big achievement for fourth stage can be achieved. And then next year, we try very hard to conclude negotiation. And second is yes. We have very frank communication with the US side. I can report you from very beginning, I brief US official, including White House official, for China's proposal, China's intention. And just one issue we a little think is that US ask China play the big role in international affairs. And now we made proposal, US at beginning show some hesitate, but frankly, now Secretary Liu on behalf of President Obama made very clear the position. So now we are very deepening communication each other.
Thank you. Before I call on Ken, I just want to take note, if I understood you, I don't want to read too much in, but your expectation that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will happen this year. But I understand
you. Professor?
Go ahead. You don't have to comment on it.
Professor is the expert.
Let's,
yeah.
let's get Mr. Lieberthal here to ask us. And I'm going to go to the back. We only have a few more minutes. I'm going to take two or three questions quickly from the back after Ken.
But he educated me for TPP many times. So that's
Kenneth Lieberthal, Brookings Institution. First of all, is it your expectation that the TPP will be concluded this year?
Right, okay.
But secondly...
This was not coordinated.
Okay.
Secondly, on the BIT, did I understand you correctly to say that you would hope and expect that the BIT will be completed and ratified before the end of the Obama administration? And I guess my question related to that is, since next year obviously is a very political year in the United States, if it cannot be ratified by the end of the administration, by the end of this administration, do you think it's very important to have it completed by the end of the administration?
Yes.
And then have a completed agreement come up in the next administration?
Yes.
Very good. Go ahead.
For TPP, because that's very frankly, yesterday Treasury briefed us and TPA just on big debate in Congress. And if that TPA can be approved, most likely in June, and some discussion or conclude in September. So that's information we got from administration. And based on reality, we think that they told us that's a real story. And then that's now TPA in June can be got TPA and concluded by Congress in September. That's a timetable that's not be described by U.S. administration, but that's the real, indeed brief us that the TPA is a very, very deepening debate now happened in Congress. So about second issue, Professor, certainly your expertise, intention is not ratified before end of Obama administration. That's conclude administration negotiation. That's already very quick. And we know that as a treaty need two-thirds above approved by senator. So that's situation, but both sides very seriously discuss and negotiate on that.
Very good. I'm going to ask the forgiveness of the audience. We're at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. We promised you promptly we would adjourn because you have other commitments. Let me just express appreciation to you on behalf of everyone. I must say your can-do, positive, happy warrior outlook is inspirational, and we have high regard for you as an interlocutor and as one committed to a highly independent and very healthy bilateral relationship. So thank you very much for being here. It's been our great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Atlantic Council Events Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at atlanticcouncil.org and follow us on Twitter @AtlanticCouncil. The Atlantic Council, working together to secure the future.